Hello, hello. It's Brooke Devard, and you're listening to the Naked Beauty Podcast. I've got champagne here, courtesy of my guest, Alessandra. Thank you for joining.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I don't even know how to introduce you because you do so much, you know, like lifestyle, travel expert, actress, native New Yorker. How would you define yourself, primarily as an actress, or is it like, why even bother defining?
Why even bother defining? I mean, life is such a transition, and I think in different, you know, day to day and different life experiences, you just change kind of everything.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. It's like, it's hard to identify yourself by your job or your profession. It's actually,
that's actually a New York characteristic,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, yeah. To introduce yourself by like what you do.
Yeah. In England, they really, it's something that they say, oh, we would never do that.
That's true. That is true. Okay. Well, you're just a beautiful person in the world. So that's why you're here.
Thank you.
Let's talk about surviving Fashion Week. It's actually like Fashion Month. It's like a full...
Yeah,
it's like
it's
a
now London and like Paris and Milan. Although I'm, not.
You're done. You've checked out.
Well, yeah, I might do a little bit in London, but I think Paris and Milan.
Yeah.
It's also pilot season.
Oh, right. So yeah, there's so much going on. I mean, you in the past week have been dressed in Chanel. You were hanging out with Olivia Palermo. You were at dinner with Diane von Furstenberg. Do you ever like pinch yourself and say, is this really happening? Is this my life? Or is it just like work, like from one event to the next?
Well, I think it's the people really that make it special. You know, that's what makes me pinch myself. Being around Diane von Furstenberg and having her give me such important life lessons, I think. And Olivia, who is just, I mean, a powerhouse. Speaking
yes.
of, like, New York powerhouses.
Yeah.
I think that it's a complete inspiration. And in that regard, I pinch myself every day. But I also admire and aspire to be
right.
someone like that as well.
Right.
But Diane's whole, I mean, I'm not sure if you saw the kind
yes.
of little
but yeah,
tell interview.
Tell everyone the lessons that she was giving.
Well, women are strong.
Absolutely.
And can do anything. And don't let anybody put you down.
Mm-hmm.
And man or woman. Doesn't matter. You are an individual who is strong, who is beautiful, who is capable of everything. And I wish that I had the knowledge and the capability to express it and vocalize exactly how poignant her words were.
Yeah. She's kind of amazing, isn't she? She's really gone far beyond just a fashion designer into like a real activist and advocate for women everywhere.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, exactly what she wants to do right now.
I think this thing about women being strong is such an important thing to think about now, especially with Trump's presidency. I think a lot of people have gone between feeling really down and defeated about it. And I kind of made this like resolution to myself, like I'm not... I remember the first week, the first like 7 or 8 days were like really painful, right? Like every time you turned on the news, it was like, oh my, it was like, you know, the stages of grief, like it's disbelief.
The 12.
Right. You're just like, is this really happening? Is this the world we live in? But I actually made a decision that I wasn't going to allow this man to steal my joy. Like I wasn't going to, like, I'm stronger than this, and we can overcome this, and although I'm going to stay aware and on top of what's happening, I'm not going to not go and have fun with my friends, and I'm not going to stop expressing my joy, because he shouldn't, like, he doesn't get to have that, you know?
What if I just said right now that I had voted for Trump?
But I'm like, thank you so much for coming on the Naked Beauty Podcast. It's been really interesting talking to you.
Bye.
No, you know what?
Bye, Felicia. Bye.
I would actually love talking to a Trump voter.
Yeah.
I'm being serious because I would
I'm
love
sorry,
to.
That wasn't me.
Yeah.
That's
I
not
know.
Me.
Yeah, thank God. Thank God. I don't know anyone. At least I don't know anyone who has admitted to
admitted.
It.
It's funny that a lot of people are quite secretive about that. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what happened in the voting booth. And obviously, I mean, he won. He's president.
Right. Oh, God.
And I actually remember when I found out. I was on a plane to London from New York. And all the votes were being casted. And I did an absentee ballot. So I voted early. And I was speaking with an Australian right before we took off, and he was sitting next to me. And we landed, and clearly he had his phone out before I did. And he just gave me a hug.
Like, I'm so sorry.
And I almost started crying. Yeah. It was a really weird moment. And I think, firstly, transition in general, no matter if it's a president or in your own life,
it can be difficult.
Yeah. Well, it's scary. It's the fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
And I think it's really powerful of you mm-hmm. to say, I'm not going to be scared of that. I'm going to take responsibility of my own life.
Right.
And determine what I want to accomplish and what I want to do.
Right. And so the funny thing about Fashion Week and kind of... So this is actually my first year working outside of the fashion industry. So I've been kind of, we actually had the V-Files runway show at Viacom at my office. So I got to see snippets of it and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I remember this. The girls running around with the headsets, all of the stress, all of the drama. Do you ever feel like the stress, especially around Fashion Week, is almost like overstated? It's like we don't work at the UN, but everyone is like, oh my God, it's Fashion Week. Do you know what I mean? Like it's like this over, it's like over the top.
I do know what you mean, but it's funny you say that because, you know, while I was going to a show, my mother was actually going to the UN. So well, I think there is a very strong balance, at least in my household, about what is reality and what is fictitious and like what just, is there yeah. for the cameras and what is there when you get home and... Right. And all of that's gone.
Right. Well, your mom is a perfect example of someone who's uh-huh. gone from fashion into uh-huh. like true activism, right?
Yeah. She said she was going to retire. And the next day, she had already started in her anti-human trafficking organization.
Yes.
Actually, a different one. And then she started her own. But For All is her
Freedom
organization.
Freedom For All, yes. And I've been to one of the Freedom For All events, and she was... you know, giving this very impassioned speech to everyone in the Boom Boom Room about how we need to, like, wake up and realize human trafficking is happening everywhere. Yeah.
It's pretty, you know, I was about to say remarkable, but remarkable has such a positive connotation. Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, that's the right word. And for listeners, just to give context, your mother before was the like head of Ford Modeling
CEO,
Agency.
CEO
of Ford.
And my grandmother and my grandfather, Eileen and Jerry Ford, started Ford Modeling Agency, yeah.
So growing up, like, did you see lots of, like, did you feel like you kind of grew up around the fashion world or industry? Or was it kind of just separate to you and it was kind of your mom's work? And
no, it definitely was not separate.
Mm-hmm.
Something that my grandmother always did and why she started the agency was because she wanted to take care of the girls, the young girls that weren't being taken care of in that world.
Mm-hmm.
And so she would have them live in her house and she made them eat broccoli and she had a curfew and she yelled at them. And you can ask absolutely any model that lived with my grandmother. And there are tons and tons and tons. She was a badass bitch and a strict bitch.
I love that. I love that.
But my mother was a lot more lenient, and we also had models living with us, fewer. But I think that kind of, in a way, shaped and determined, you know, my own view of what beauty is.
Yeah.
Because I was never the tallest, the skinniest, or the prettiest girl in the room. And so it very much defined who I am.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to imagine being young, at a very young and impressionable age, being surrounded by tall, incredibly skinny models all the time. Did it ever make you kind of question your relationship to your body and self-image?
No, I would say that...
Because you were just like, that's not me.
I mean, listen, I think I was a pretty precocious young girl to begin with. But I think 12-year-old girls in middle school are far scarier than...
That's so true.
I mean, that's what probably gave there in middle school is probably where my biggest, insecurities came from. Going through puberty and being the first one to have boobs and...
Were you the first?
I mean...
Amongst the first?
Yes, definitely amongst the first.
Yeah.
Maybe even the first.
Yeah.
And I remember hiding my bra, and some girl at gym class said, "Oh, you're wearing a bra." And I was like, "No, I'm wearing a tank top underneath my shirt." So in regards to growing up, I mean, with models and people that are taller and prettier, and you know that you're never going to be that one person in that room that is the skinniest, the tallest, the prettiest. It's interesting. I read a quote from Audrey Hepburn the other day, and she said, "Happiest girls are the prettiest girls."
Oh, I love that.
And I truly believe that.
Yes. That may need to be the episode of this show. Yes.
I really believe it does come from the inside out. And that is why I admire people like Diane von Furstenberg.
Yeah.
I mean, after her shows, she goes down the runway and she's dancing to the music.
Yeah.
And it is so unlike any other designer
who's
out
miserable.
There. Yeah. She, well, not even miserable. I mean, their show ended. But the real point is that she's enjoying every moment of life and really soaking it in. And Audrey Hepburn also said, "I love people who make me laugh. I honestly think it's a thing I like most, to laugh. It cures a multiple of illnesses, and it's probably the most important thing in a person."
I agree.
I wish I knew how to breathe better, and get oxygen into my stomach, but I definitely know how to laugh.
Yes.
And God, those are the people I admire the most. And I think Audrey Hepburn kind of had it spot on that those are the people that you're drawn to in a room.
Totally.
You are drawn to that person that is smiling, that is laughing, that is happy.
Yes, absolutely. And I have always loved Audrey Hepburn, despite her being the cliche in every college girl's dorm. Like, they have a picture of her at Breakfast at Tiffany's.
What? Was that the cliche in your college?
I feel like I've just seen all these really bad, pop art rendered. Like, everyone's like, "Audrey Hepburn's my style icon." So it becomes like this cliche. But I've always...
We clearly went to different schools very much. So, because I have never seen that.
Oh, really?
No.
I feel like she's... if you don't know that much, I guess, about fashion, a lot of people say that she is their favorite, style icon.
And Jackie Kennedy.
Yeah. Even that's, a little sophisticated. Most people just, end at Audrey. But...
Really?
I think that Audrey Hepburn, the reason why I've always thought she was beautiful is because she has a beautiful spirit as well. She doesn't just look good. She... is good inside, and that shows, and I feel like that's what makes her so attractive to me.
Well, what's really interesting is that so when I asked Diane von Furstenberg the other day, and I put it on my Instagram, what her advice was for a woman, I realized Audrey Hepburn said something similar, and she said, I believe in being strong when everything seems to be going wrong. I believe that happy girls are the prettiest girls. I believe that tomorrow is another day, and I believe in miracles."
Aww.
And I know, it's quite sweet. And I don't think that having a level of innocence or hope for the future or dreams makes you naive in any way.
Yeah.
And I think that, if you look at all of these strong individuals, which include my grandmother and my mother, it's people who are determined, have a goal, and power through it.
And I couldn't agree more.
Through it.
I couldn't agree more.
And laugh through it. They laugh at their mistakes. Everyone fails. It's about how you get up.
I couldn't agree more.
And would I admire about you is actually the fact that you were able to interview your grandmother and your mother and learn a lot about beauty in their times.
Yes, because it's changed so much, you know, over time. Like, I don't know, have you ever looked back at, like, pictures of your mom when she was your age?
I look back at pictures of my grandmother when she was my age.
And she was probably, like, perfect, right? Like, perfectly coiffed and pressed and powdered.
I will say this. She passed away with her nails done phenomenally.
That's amazing.
In the hospital.
That's amazing.
Yes.
A different era.
A different era, yeah. It is. I mean, but you see it again. I think everything in life, everything in art, design, culture is somewhat circular.
True.
It always comes back into fashion at some point. So I told you I started making my own vitamin C powder and rose water. And we spoke about your egg white mask, and it's just a little bit too much for me.
Okay.
But what would you say are your three favorite easy at home to do things?
I would
obviously
say
in beauty.
Yes, I would say buy coconut oil and use it for everything when you get out of the shower.
I use it as makeup remover.
Right, yeah, great. I think that's like an amazing place to start. Buy coconut oil and find three ways to replace commercial products and start using that. You can use it for shaving your legs. Like, you can use it to replace shaving cream. You can use it to replace hair conditioner. You can leave it in your hair for 15 minutes and, you know,
overnight,
perfect, and then rinse it out. And then you can use it to moisturize your skin after the shower. So I'd say that's like a really good, easy place to start.
You don't have a dog.
No.
I know. Because let me tell you.
What?
When I put coconut oil as a moisturizer, he licks me nonstop.
Oh my God, I never thought about that.
Kill him.
That's really annoying. I never thought about that.
It goes on for hours. So my coconut oil moisturizing regime is very much when my dog is not at home.
Okay, fair enough. That's really funny.
Okay, next one. You have three to do.
Oh, three? Well, I'm saying three uses for coconut oil.
Oh, okay.
Use it for shaving
cream.
Use it for conditioner. Use it for body lotion. I mean, I could go, you know.
No, that's
I could talk
fair
about
enough.
This stuff for hours. I'm here to talk to you.
Okay.
You travel nonstop. You're, like, always on a plane. You're always in a different country. Like, it really doesn't ever stop. Mm. How do you keep it all balanced while you're traveling so much?
What do you mean by all?
Meaning, usually when I travel, my workout regimen falls off completely because in my head I'm like, oh, I'll wake up and go to the hotel gym. Maybe I'll do that like the first day, but then that doesn't really happen. Because my sleep schedule is all off, I'm not getting the right amount of rest. I'm taking sleeping pills, which I don't like to take because I think it makes you really like dependent on that to fall asleep. My diet is way off because I'm out, I'm celebrating, I'm having, everything is off.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you kind of maintain your some semblance of balance while you're traveling from London back to New York? You know, how do you keep it all together?
Well, I will say one thing you should do is absolutely, you know, keep your workout routine. I do have to admit, though, that I have not been to a gym for a year and a half because I've been quite sick and a little bit in and out of hospitals. But so I'm what I think you and Gillian spoke about, skinny fat. But it's not about that. That's never what it's about. Mm-hmm. What it's about is feeling your strongest and feeling your best. And, of course, the first couple of days going anywhere, and I speak for other people, not for myself, because I can't remember in the past 3 years where I have been somewhere for 5 days.
Oh, wow.
So my time clock
is just crazy.
I just don't think I even have one anymore.
Right.
But okay, so what they say, and I've read articles from flight attendants, from scientists to, I mean, everything. there are several ways to do it. And they found out that with athletes, mm-hmm. baseball players specifically in this article that I read, but that they should start acclimating themselves 3 days before their travel. So a day per
hour
of time difference.
Okay.
So you would, for example...
Interesting. Okay.
If going to Los Angeles, mm-hmm. 3 days from New York, 3 days before, stay up an hour later.
I see. Okay, to start...
So that when you get there, you're more acclimated. The other thing... I mean, listen, I don't do that.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Well, do as I read.
Exactly.
I'm not even sure. Yeah, you know, I say that. But the other thing is wake up, get up, schedule a meeting in the morning.
Right.
Do something, force yourself.
Yeah.
To have an event or
go outside.
See someone, go outside, do something. In the morning, the very next morning after the plane ride, so that you do get acclimated.
That is actually a very good tip. Because sometimes it's very tempting, especially if I just took the red eye from London for a weekend in London, which was like a horrible idea in retrospect.
Oh, I do it all the time. I've gone from London to LA for a day.
I admire your strength. Because the moment we land, I think it was like, I don't know, 9 a.m., after I've landed, and it's a short flight from New York to London. It's short.
Yeah, it's too short.
But it's
short.
Weird.
They serve
like three meals, and you're like, okay, I've only been on this plane for 5 hours. You've served me dinner. 3 hours later, you can't serve breakfast. That's not how it works. Anyway, so I land, and it's 9 a.m., and all I want to do is just, like, lie down. But you can't. Right? Because then you nap half the day, and then you're all off. So you just have to, like,
I don't know how to nap.
I don't either.
I
can lie down and, like, relax, but I can't actually sleep if it's not time to go to bed.
Yeah, I have an issue with sleep in general, but it's... I've dated enough South Americans that you would think I know siestas like the back of my hand, but I don't. And if it's an overnight flight... Try to sleep on that plane.
Yeah.
I take magnesium. I am magnesium. Wow.
Magnesium's amazing. So you take magnesium on a plane and it's enough to make you sleepy?
No.
You need hard drugs.
Well, yeah. Some people do, some people don't.
I need them. If I'm gonna realistically sleep on a flight, I need prescription strength.
Drugs.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I would suggest is, and I brought them here for you, but
yes, so many presents here.
So I really believe in like lavender oil.
Ooh, I love lavender oil.
I put it everywhere.
Oh, wow. Do you have like a roll on or you just like bring the,
I don't even care.
Yeah.
But I mean, I will pour it.
That's
on
amazing.
My wrist, you know,
yeah,
just
it's so
all the
calming.
Acne behind your ears, on your temples. I stick it inside of my nose. But I think it's really about what comforts you. And then mm-hmm. I also use a pillow potion. It's called from Aurora. But
so all of those essential oils.
All of the essential oils, what makes you comfortable. I have a lavender eye mask. I travel with a little tiny baby pillow that I hold. And to your point about working out, they say that you should work out mm-hmm. when you get home.
Yeah.
I say home, but when you get to the location that you're at.
Yeah.
But also before the plane ride because it makes you tired.
Oh,
and
that's smart.
It releases endorphins and
that's
it relaxes
smart.
Your muscles. And then you take magnesium. And obviously this is more aerobic stuff, but then they also say that when you get to your location, you should put your feet up on a wall above your head so that the blood comes back down to the rest of your body.
Huh.
And even now, one of my favorite things that I've learned, which has nothing to do with sleep, but just with travel comfort in general, it is compression socks.
Can you please explain these to me?
I'm in love with them.
I have several questions now.
Do it all the time. Like, I even have compression tights.
Okay. So, what do you wear when you're traveling for these long flights, and what do compression socks do? Because I've heard of them. I don't really get what they do. And I've been playing around with, like, the ultimate flight outfit.
Okay.
And if you go too comfortable, then you feel like a slob, and you just kind of feel like, I don't want to feel like, I'm not going to wear sweatpants.
You like looking chic.
I mean, I just don't want to feel like, oh my gosh, no one can see me because I look like complete and total shit right now. You know what I mean? Like, you already feel not great traveling.
I guess I don't have that type of fear. But what I started doing about a year ago, because I was traveling so much, I mean, really every 3 to 4 to 5 days,
yeah,
definitely not a full week ever in one location, is arriving in one outfit, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then, especially when it's an overnight or a red eye flight,
mm-hmm.
Making a ritual and making it feel like home by changing into a different outfit.
On
the plane or right before the plane.
Got it.
But
okay.
In the airport.
Got it.
And I am absolutely in love with Yves Lom's cleansing balm.
Okay.
It smells like chamomile, and it just has this amazing calming effect.
Amazing. Okay, I have to try this.
You're obsessed. I have no words.
Okay.
It changed my life. And I just rub it in, and you're supposed to just breathe in 5 times. And I'm not trying to sound like a spiritual guru because I've never done yoga in my life. But
the whole idea
is that it's a ritual, right? To keep something similar, to keep a pattern,
mm-hmm.
to make your body feel as if you are going to sleep.
Yeah,
or
totally.
As if you are going home.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that. You've been everywhere. Is there anywhere that you, like, really want to go that you haven't been?
Yeah.
Where?
Yeah, absolutely. Oddly enough, I've never been to the Middle East, and I'm...
You've never been to Israel?
No.
Oh. You've got to go to, like, Tel Aviv. It's amazing.
When did you go?
I went, as you may remember, I had an Israeli boyfriend. We went to meet his family for Passover, so we did Tel Aviv and Jerusalem for like 2 weeks. It was incredible. It was senior spring break, actually, so everyone went to like Atlantis Resort, and I was like, no thanks, I'm going to go to Israel. But I would go back. Like, I think it reminded me of Miami, actually. It was just like this gorgeous beach, like... Everyone is so carefree, and there's great food and great nightlife. It's like an amazing, cosmopolitan, fun, like really fun city.
When you say Miami, I think fake boobs, high heels.
No, don't say that about
and
my favorite
short,
city ever.
Sparkly
I'm obsessed
skirts.
With Miami.
Why?
I'm obsessed with Miami. I'm trying to get my husband to like agree to move there, and he's like, I don't want to live in Miami.
Why does he not want to move, and why do you love it so much?
So I love it so much because I think that there is an amazing quality of life that you can have there, where you literally wake up, it's 80 degrees, you can go to the beach, even if you work in an office, at the end of the day, there's still the beach. I think there are great restaurants, I think there's a great arts and culture scene. He does not want to go there. And also, I don't drive, so I don't want to live in a place like LA where I have to drive.
You've never gotten your driver's license?
No,
I was going
not.
To. My next question was going to be, why not LA then?
Right. So, one, LA is like extremely far away. I feel like in L.A.,
it's only a 2-hour difference from Miami to New York. But it feels emotionally far away.
It feels farther.
Fine.
And I think that L.A., this is probably an unfair characterization, but I've spent, you know, I went to school in California, so I've spent a lot of time in L.A. I feel like everything is about the industry and who you know. So even if you're a dog walker, it's like, well, whose dogs do you walk? If you're a hairstylist, it's like, whose hair do you do? You know, it's like, I don't want that vibe. So I think Miami's just like a perfect in-between, like walkable city. He thinks that the people there are so tacky. And I'm like, I'm like, that's what makes it amazing. We went
what
out.
What do you mean?
We went out there, and there was, I swear to God, a woman who was 7 months pregnant, at least 7 months pregnant, with like 8-inch
stilettos.
Louboutins,
yeah, strappy ones.
I was living for it. I was like, this is amazing. She's not giving it up for a second. She's like keeping it. I think all of the women there, they're totally over the top, but for some reason, it just like makes me happy. I love it there. He's like, I can't. He's like, it's so cheesy.
I do see you beaming. When you speak
it.
About
See?
It.
Exactly.
Yeah, you are kind of glowing and have an extra spice about
yeah, it. Yeah, I have this, like, vision of, like, being pregnant there. I've, like, decided I don't want to be pregnant in New York
in
City.
In Louboutin heels?
No.
Strappy ones, strutting down the street in a shiny, like, sequin short dress that shows your tushy?
No. I'm so not pregnant now, and even I can't wear high heels anymore. I'm just like, I can't do it. It's not comfortable, so.
Oh, well. So I don't know if I hope that you get your dream, because that means that we lose you.
I know. But
I do want your dreams to come true.
Yeah, we'll see if I'm able to convince him. Which cities do you think have the best spas and, like, skincare?
Interesting. I think I didn't answer your first question about where I have wanted to go and haven't been. And there are so many places, Middle East, Antarctica, but a couple years ago, Sweden was really on. I went there, and they have, I mean, they've always had an incredible.
Yes, I'm dying to go to Sweden.
Regime,
by the way,
it's amazing. I went to the. I'm going to pronounce it wrong. I've never been able to pronounce this right. Archipelago.
Archipelago, maybe?
No, it's not.
No, that's wrong.
You're thinking Bellagio Hotel in Vegas.
Okay, so you went to...
So, we were sailing around.
Okay.
And there are all these amazing tiny islands, and everyone has a sauna. Of course, I am generalizing because that is unfair.
It's
within their culture.
It's pretty accurate. I lived in Finland for 3 months, and, like, literally everyone has a sauna there.
And you go, no matter how lush or luxurious it is, you have a sauna, and then you jump in cold water, and it's kind of a back and forth. Also, Russia. I mean, Russia has an incredible kind of scrub, where they basically torture you.
Yes, it sounds a lot like Turkish hammam situation.
So I was going to say in Turkey, the Turkish hammams are pretty amazing. I have to say Russia was more intense. I think the woman was trying to kill me.
Yeah, they peel off like 17 layers of your skin.
I'm not sure I had skin after that.
Exactly.
At all.
I felt assaulted afterwards.
But did you like it?
I felt very clean. Tell me the truth. I felt very clean. Like, I felt like I've never been this clean in my life. Like, I felt
right.
But
it really does peel off every layer of skin.
And this was in Turkey, so the combination of the language barrier, like, I wasn't able to communicate to her, like,
stop, actually
killing me. Because I think
you could have screamed and said, ah!
Yeah, I think she would have. I was trying to be subtle and, like, polite. I was like, maybe, like, not so rough. And she was just, like, going in.
I just think she didn't give a shit.
Yeah, exactly. She's like,
I don't think it's a language barrier.
This is what
I think she knew
for.
What you said and didn't give an F.
Yeah, totally. So in Russia, it's even more intense.
Well, with the woman I had, yes.
Yeah. But did you like it?
Yeah, I did.
It's a painful, pleasurable way.
Well, yeah, in certain spots, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a spot. That's a spot. And then in other places, like, you know, on my shins, I'm like, what the heck? Stop.
Stop it. Yeah.
There's no more dead skin.
I know. Too much.
So I think, and recently, last year or the year before, I went to Japan, which has if you had interviewed me 2 years ago, that would have been my number one.
Oh.
And it was for my entire
life. I'm obsessed. The
Japanese.
I'm obsessed.
I mean, are
the culture.
Just,
yeah, I'm obsessed.
It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe in skin whitening. Of course, I'm not Asian. I'm not black.
You're very white.
Well, okay, hold up there. I'm 50% Hungarian. I get really dark sometimes.
Okay. You've got a little something mixed in.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
But you know, aside from that, obviously, I'm not going to be using whitening lotion. I think that they take incredible care of their skin.
Oh, absolutely. And the sun. They avoid the sun religiously, which is why they look so amazing.
I mean, when I was with my mother in Thailand, there was a Chinese woman swimming in the ocean with an umbrella.
With an umbrella, yeah.
I have never... How did you know what I was going to say?
Because I've seen it. They carry umbrellas.
Where? In the ocean?
In Asia, I've seen...
In the ocean.
Well, I didn't... I have not seen it in the ocean.
Thank you.
But I knew that was coming because I know that they take extreme precautions to protect themselves from the sun. It's like almost like the sun is this like toxic...
Well, it is. I've heard your podcast with...
Gillian.
And... about sunscreen, and it is so important. Of course I didn't use it before the age of 18. You know what I mean? Of course I didn't.
You live and you learn. Yeah.
Yeah. And my mother was the same.
Yeah.
And
most people don't.
Well, you don't know. You don't care when you're that age.
Unless you're extremely, extremely fair, which Gillian is, and that's probably why she grew up more hyper aware of the...
Right.
Right? Or do you want to start? Or do you want to start with the three... things, beauty trends, products, things that you hate?
I'll move the mic over here.
Hello.
No, I want to start with the ones that I love.
Okay.
It would be, honestly, I think my Dr. Organic Coconut...
Yes, I just tried
oil
this.
...oil lip serum.
It's amazing.
It's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
It would be lavender oil.
Okay, I love lavender oil.
Just because it calms me down and I can put it all over my body. And
yeah.
I love it. And then, God, the other one, I'm debating between eye cream and coconut oil.
Which eye cream do you use?
So I've been trying so many out recently.
Yeah, it's. I feel like I'm like an eye cream whore. I just try everything.
Well, La Prairie really works for me.
Okay. It's super expensive now.
The blue one. I know. That's why I've been trying others. Because I don't want to keep up that expensive habit.
But it's good?
Well, for me. But someone told me, you know, what works for you works for you.
Right. That's true.
And you need to be doing something for a long enough time for, like, to see
the
results.
Yes. Yes.
But I saw it pretty quickly, but I have to say your interview with Gillian kind of scared me because now I'm thinking, oh, maybe because the lines went away so quickly that I, you know, will actually have more lines in the future because of it.
I don't think so.
We don't really know, though, what it does to us.
I know. It's true. Do you do any, like, anti-aging facial treatments, like lasers or chemical peels or any of that crazy shit? Botox?
No.
But you're
but
like...
But I'm really... What?
You're, like, in that L.A. actor world where, like, everyone does something to their face.
I don't think they do.
Really?
As you get older, yeah, but in their 20s, I don't think so. Okay. Not everyone. No.
But I always thought it was sort of strange. Like, if you're an actor, an actress, I don't want to just say it's just women, because men are doing stuff too. Mm. When your face is, like, your instrument, isn't it a bad idea to, like, fuck with it and paralyze it?
I mean, I'd imagine so, but I'm also not here to
judge
anybody because I haven't won an Oscar. So I'll shut the fuck up right now.
Right, okay. Is there anything else that you're obsessed with? So we have lavender oil, your La Prairie eye cream.
I do. I hold that one in.
You have mixed feelings.
I have mixed feelings
because it's
so expensive and there's so many ingredients.
How much is it?
Brooke.
Just...
A lady never kisses and tells.
Okay. It's there are products that when I think about, like, I'm obsessed. I'm like a fragrance. I'm obsessed with fragrance.
Oh, you are?
I'm like a big fragrance person.
My mother never wore fragrances. My father never did. Although my boyfriend uses one molecule and I now use his stuff.
Oh.
But I should have brought over all my tester fragrances.
Oh my God, I would have loved that.
I have about 150 and I will never use them.
Next time.
Okay.
But you know what? Fragrance is super expensive and like lavender oil, like natural oils smell great. So that's something, like, there are things that I knowingly waste money on and like eye cream can just be yours. Like, don't feel too bad about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's more the natural issue.
Yes,
I think that
yes.
I hold with it because I know that if the skin around your eyes is the most sensitive area,
right?
Why is that the one area you're not putting natural products on?
Yes, yeah. Some people use shea butter for eye cream, and I've tried, but it made me break out. I'm still shopping around. I'd love to find like a great natural eye cream.
I just ordered about 5 different ones to try them.
Tell me how they go.
I will let you know.
Tell me how they go.
I will let you know. But I use coconut oil to remove my eye makeup.
Yes.
I no longer use the Vita pads them off. I use even olive oil.
Yeah. All you need is an oil to take off makeup.
Yeah. And Yves Lom is great, but again, it's, you know, everything's a brand.
Yes.
So I don't know if that's the best approach, but at the same time, you know, sunscreen is a brand. You can't make your own sunscreen.
Don't say too much. I don't want you to mess up your beauty endorsement a few years down the road, so... I don't think you can make your own sunscreen. That's like a step. That's taking it a step too far.
But sunscreen really is the most important.
So we didn't talk about the beauty trends that you hate. Are there any beauty trends that just drive you crazy and you're so sick of?
Yes. Okay. Well, I'll tell you one because it is the most effective beauty trick in the world.
Okay. Oh my God.
And I hate it.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
Drinking water.
Oh, my God. Please continue. I think I know where you're going with this.
I hate it.
You personally do not like drinking water.
Well, it's just boring. I mean, I don't... Oh, so my sister recommended this app, and I got so...
What's the app called?
Okay, so it's called Plant Nanny.
Okay.
And it's kind of amazing because you put in your weight, your height, and your activity level. My activity level was clearly zero, like solitary.
Yes.
But you have to drink. I remember during the first day, I almost threw my phone across the room because...
It was just telling you to drink water all the time?
All the time. And I stupidly put on like, yes, okay, you can give me notifications. But that's the whole point because it tells you to reminds you to drink water.
Yeah.
However, I 2 days ago deleted it because I was in meetings and I didn't have time to put the water that I drank. And then my fucking plant died.
Yeah.
No. I'm like, I'm just so sick of you. But I'm going to actually re-download it because...
It actually sounds kind of cool. Plant Nanny?
Plant Nanny.
I'm going to download that.
It is really amazing. I actually noticed a massive change in my skin.
When you drink a lot of water?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the thing. So I thought you were going to say that the trend that you're like done with is people giving drinking water as a beauty tip because it is like almost, it's like the most, I don't know, oversighted secret to beauty. So someone like Naomi Campbell, like someone who's like extremely gorgeous will be like, what's the secret to your beauty? And she'll be like, I drink a lot of water. And it's like, okay, and you won the genetic lottery. Great. But
I was going to say, the other thing is people giving lots of regimens and regimes for beauty. And honestly, a lot of it is genetics.
Of course. I mean, you know it from seeing all of the models. Like some people just win the genetic lottery and they don't have to do that much to look amazing, and then they talk about these like complicated beauty routines, and it's like, okay.
I mean, listen, everyone I think has to especially in our society and in a city like New York, or especially California, where you're driving all the time. I remember moving there and watching people drive to the gym. And I thought, what an anomaly this is. Like, why not? You have a warm outside.
Right.
What the heck are you doing driving to get exercise?
Right.
But, you know, our bodies were meant to move and were meant to do things. So,
and drink water and,
But I think, you know, even models, they work at it.
Yeah, but it's their job.
It's
their job to look
good.
But
it doesn't mean that all of them are anorexic and not eating.
Oh,
that, you know, that is, again, people are born in different shapes and sizes, and everyone is beautiful. And not just genetics.
Yeah.
You know, some people are tall, some people are short.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally.
Some people are black, some people are white.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just how you're born, absolutely.
Yeah.
So one thing that I think stands out about you, especially when I see you in, like, as you're photographed and stuff, I think that you are a true, and I'm sure people have told you this before, I think you're, like, a true American beauty, right? You, for
what?
Me. Yeah, I mean, I think, especially in terms of when you're at these, like, really black tie events, I notice that your hair is done, but it's not too done, right? Your makeup is done, but it's not, like, overly
perfect,
right? You have this, and I feel like American beauty is kind of, it's that easy, relaxed, confident, healthy, all American girl look, and I think you kind of have that. Is that a conscious thing? Is that something that, are you aware of that, or?
No, and actually, funnily enough, I would somewhat define American beauty in a different way, and I definitely have never associated myself really with ever being American.
Really?
Nor, yeah. And I don't think I've ever been told that I'm American beauty. I've been told that I'm exotic looking.
Yeah, well, I guess if you think about, like, a 1950s America, yes, you're exotic. But in terms of, like, the modern American girl, I think that's a girl like you who can seamlessly go between super casual downtown and then super formal, but not feel out of place
in either place.
You know? And when you're getting ready for these events, is it conscious that you kind of, like, you always just, like, look very at ease. Is that just, like, a good hair and makeup team, or is it?
No.
No? Okay.
That is me putting my hair in a bun.
Amazing.
I don't even know how to use a blow dryer.
So it's
when I do,
it's authentic.
I hold the end of my hair. I don't use a brush, and I just hold it so it's straight, and then I just kind of blow it down. But is it conscious or unconscious? Honestly, it's about work. I always go to these events from work, and that's kind of it, you know?
Yeah.
It's functionality.
I think that what you do a good job of is always looking like yourself, and you always seem comfortable.
Oh, thank you. I mean, that, I think, is the biggest compliment that anybody could give me, is that I'm comfortable in my own skin.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's so important. Because, I mean, a lot of times you see people at these events and you can tell that they have been coaxed into something by a stylist, and they look...
Like who?
Visually uncomfortable.
I mean, like an example.
Of, like, a celebrity that, like, looks uncomfortable. Rita Ora is a good example. Every time I see her, I'm like, okay, so this is, like, a something that stylists in a room concepted for you, but who are you, really? And is this what you would naturally choose to wear?
Well,
probably not.
Yeah, okay, probably not. But I have to say, I've spent a little bit of time with her, and she is so...
Cool.
Yeah. Kind.
Yeah.
Generous, creative, and brilliant. And I think, you know, she's a performer.
Yes. Okay. And so now you've asked me to name names, and now I feel bad.
No. Don't, because I think actually, in a way, that's a very interesting thing that you brought up, because singers, right, are so different.
Yes.
And there are performers, and then there are singers, and
yes,
and then the music world is something I know nothing about, but there are definitely personas and personalities. Yes. And they, you know, step outside wearing meat like Lady Gaga.
Right, right. They can't be as...
Well, they can.
Yes,
but it's, certain people choose not to.
Yeah.
And it's a costume, and it is, like, a different persona.
Yes. Yes. I think I, at least, would never want to be in something that I felt was a costume. So, when you've been everywhere, I have my own theories about which city has the most attractive people. I think, so I think that Italian, I think the men in Italy are like the most attractive men, mostly not because of the way they look, but because of the way they dress and their lifestyle,
their
attention
style.
To detail. Just like
the policemen there in Italy. Holy shit. I mean,
are they hot?
No, I mean their outfits.
Oh.
Their suits are tailored.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
it's the tailoring, the attention to detail. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think Italian men are probably like the most attractive men. Women, it's hard. Maybe, I don't know. Which city do you think has the most attractive people?
I think attractive is defined in so many different ways.
Okay, fair enough. If you had to generalize and just...
I guess I just can't because
it's too hard.
It's so much about warmth.
Yeah, I was going to say LA has like really attractive people.
Oh, I wouldn't.
Really? You don't think so?
Well, see, that's the thing. It's with taste, right? And the culture you grew up in and what you appreciate.
Yeah,
and
true.
You worked in the fashion world, and so you immediately went to attractiveness, meaning tailoring and clothing.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
And so, attractiveness to me is such a general, broad term.
I guess for you, I could ask, where are people the happiest, and then you maybe think they're the most attractive.
Yeah, it's funny. I know. Where are they the happiest? I've noticed people on islands are quite happy.
Yes, absolutely.
They really are.
Yeah.
Island life, whether it's in Portugal or Jamaica, you know?
And that does make you attractive. When you're
or
like,
Thailand.
When you're at ease and happy.
Yeah.
That's like... Yeah.
I think, funnily enough, I think anybody who is really physically active, whether it's a profession or just the fact that they do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe because it's an animal instinct that they're driven and focused and you're drawn to that.
Totally. I mean,
that could just be a primal instinct.
I think it is. I think that men in New York aren't attractive for the most part because they aren't at, like, I think LA offers you a more active lifestyle. Places outside of.
Oh, I was thinking like hardcore skiing, jumping out of helicopters.
That's
like,
yeah. No.
That's what I was.
But like
surfing Mavericks.
Yes, so surf. I was thinking like we have friends in LA. They live in Venice. They literally wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning. They go surfing together. Then they go on a hike, and then they work out. And that's just like normal. That's just like a normal level of activity. That's not like a special day. I mean, granted.
What do you mean then they go work out?
Then, so, exactly. They go surfing, they do their hike with their dogs, they do like running camp with their dogs, and then that's just like waking up, and then they go work out like at a gym or do a run or do like a separate workout.
I've lived in Venice and my cousin surfs Mavericks and he taught me how to surf. And I can surf tiny little waves, but I do notice how kind of empowering it is, but also how much strength it takes.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't imagine doing a hike and then a workout.
So much of beauty, as we discussed, is health, being physically active. You mentioned that you've spent some time like in and out of hospitals.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's affecting your ability to kind of like feel beautiful and be active and
it's interesting. It's been twice in my life. Once when I was 19 and I had two herniated discs and they still are, but to a lesser extent. and I was in a wheelchair for 3 months, and I you know, was visiting hospitals, and I was so depressed. I couldn't even go to the bathroom on my own. Mm. And that just is the most demoralizing feeling. Yeah. It really is. And then now it's a digestive system issue and complication. There's several things. But, yeah, exercise releases endorphins. And before, a year and a half ago, I was training to do Tough Mudder. And, oh, wow. And, you know, growing up, I was a competitive horseback rider.
Right.
And I live for the ocean and live for the sea. Yeah. And I water ski. I wakeboard. Mm-hmm. I do everything. And it's frustrating. It's saddening. But I have not only hope, I have incredible support system to kind of get me through it. And
yeah.
But do I wake up and sometimes feel like shit because I can't do
right.
what
you used to do?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's real.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That doesn't just, you know, affect, I think, beauty.
Psychologically, it must have an effect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you said this is something you've been dealing with for like about a year.
Well, it's gotten worse in the past 6 months, really. But yeah. But it started about 2 years ago, okay. A year and a half, 2 years ago.
And digestive issues are extremely hard to diagnose.
I've done CT scans. I've had balloons with water stuck up my bum.
Oh my God!
That you have to squeeze out.
And it's scary, like not knowing what's wrong.
Endoscopy.
Oh wow.
That's the thing. Actually, when you don't know what's wrong, you feel like you're going crazy.
Right, right. Because you're like, I know something's wrong, but like, what is it?
Yeah, exactly. It's an intuitive, but it's not even intuitive. I mean, it's physical. It's factual mm-hmm. in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And when they can't find it or diagnose it, it's a real issue. And I think that's, that. You know, I don't suffer from this, but I think that's the case also with mental health stigmas and issues, because you can't see it. It
right.
doesn't exist.
Right.
That's not
right.
fair. That's not right.
right. Right.
And I think actually this country has a bit of an issue with their healthcare system, but with being more proactive towards preventative
yes.
measures
right.
and rather than, oh, we'll take care
giving
of you,
you
when yeah. you already are suffering.
Right, right. No, absolutely, absolutely.
That goes back to what Diane von Furstenberg
yes.
said,
yeah.
oddly enough.
Yeah.
She said, you know, solve the problem before it happens, essentially.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I also think that it goes back to what she said about how women have to know their strength, because oftentimes, right, when you're young and you're in school, it's kind of like a do what you're told, respect authority
yeah.
thing. And
yeah.
when it is your health, you have to tell doctors that are much older and much more experienced,
yes.
actually, I know what's going on inside of my own body. I'm not crazy. And you have to demand more. And as a woman, I think oftentimes they expect you to just take their word, you know, as truth.
I've had so much of that. And actually
yeah.
in one of the hospitals in New York, when I was naked in a robe doing a scan, with 10 people watching through a glass door, another person who worked there walked in, which is illegal, by the way.
Oh, God.
And walked in to check in as opposed to using their appropriate entrance.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, sorry, my vagina, my ass are showing.
You're right.
And it's more than anything given me strength, but I cried that night, you know?
You feel so vulnerable.
It's so, so vulnerable. And it's really a unique experience that I, of course, wish upon nobody, but I know everyone at some point goes through their struggles.
Right.
So it's made me stronger, but not because of the circumstances, I would say. I would say it's because of the people that have supported me mm-hmm. during
yeah.
the circumstances.
Yeah.
And I'm really lucky to have such a strong mother to ask the questions that I didn't know how to ask.
Yes, yes, yeah.
You don't know what you don't know.
Exactly, exactly. And I also think that it's incredibly easy. I mean, even when I have something like a small little cold, which I had 2 weeks ago, you take your health for granted.
Yeah. Until it's gone.
Until it's gone.
Yeah.
It's just so easy to take for granted the ability to just walk around.
To walk.
Yeah.
To move.
Yeah.
And I really admire people that have gone through far worse.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say, I mean, overcome, yes, but you don't really ever overcome it if it's a permanent issue. Like my friend's father, who is quadriplegic after horseback riding and hunting in England, and he fell off the horse. And he, bravery isn't it. I don't know because I haven't gone through it, but they're soldiers. They're yeah. survivors. And,
yeah.
And I think that's where the laughter comes in, because with every tragedy or and beauty and everything, you need laughter and support.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You need someone to be championing for you.
Absolutely.
Well, but you also need to champion yourself.
Self, yes.
And that's what someone told me the other day. It's during these times that you learn more about yourself and to trust yourself and to be kind and gracious with yourself. Don't be hard on yourself.
Yeah.
If you can't get everything done in one day, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's real.
And I think that goes to beauty as well. You know, be kind to yourself. Not everything's perfect. Having lived with hundreds of models in my life, 4 or 5 at a time.
Yeah.
No, really, that's not a joke. I could tell you that everyone has issues. And the most important thing, and I need to take this advice as well, is to give yourself a break and be generous and kind to yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't believe we've been talking for like an hour and a half. You've been so generous with your time and vulnerable. And you've listened to the show, so I know you know the question that's coming your way. But when do you feel the most beautiful?
Yeah, when I'm happy.
Mm.
It sounds ridiculous, and I know that you hate sweatpants when outside of the house, but I even remember being 16, going out with models at a nightclub, and I know, 16, so wild. And wearing sweatpants and flip-flops and having come just from the ocean.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
Yeah.
And just feeling free and liberated and beautiful. And so I would say when I'm strong physically, when I'm laughing, when yes. I'm with people that I love, and when I'm learning.
Yeah.
That's when I feel the most beautiful.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing and for coming on. This was really fun. I hope you come back. I feel like we have so much more to talk about.
Oh, Brooke, thank you for having me.
Of course.